Welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Steve McKnight.
I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And today on the show, we're doing a rapid fire. Your questions answered. 20 questions in 15 minutes. Now, these all come from our most recent webinar where we were talking about how to get the bank to say yes when you're purchasing your first or your next investment property. And I went through and picked out all of the best questions, which we're just going to go through. Andrew, I'll ask you first one. This one comes from Todd Moy and says, hi, what's better, overpaying regular mortgage installments or using a revolving credit?
Well, there's no right or wrong answer. I'm going to take 15 minutes just talking about this one. Look, if you overpay your regular table loan, the benefit of that is it'll improve your servicing. The downside is you don't have access to the extra money that you've paid down without reapplying for it. Revolving credit, you've got access to that money, but it doesn't necessarily improve your servicing until you make that lump sum payment off your table loan because the facility's still there. So it depends on your situation, but great question. Ed, your question is?
No, you've got to get, I reckon, can I say what I think?
Yeah, okay, go for it.
Revolving credit, 100%, that's what I'd do. Not personalised financial advice.
Okay. No, but then you also have to be able to trust yourself to budget. Not everyone can use a revolving credit successfully.
Yeah, but if you want to know my opinion about what's better, 100% revolving credit.
Yeah, if you want to know mine, then you get personalised financial advice and figure out which one is better for you. Right. Next one for Ed is, which table loans allow you to make lump sum payments while it's on its fixed term?
So this is really good, and this really relates to the mortgage buster strategy where you end up saving money into a revolving credit, then using that money to pay down your mortgage. Generally, with most table loans, you can pay up to, I think, about 5% of the total value.
5% or $10,000, some of the banks are.
Paying without incurring any break fees on that.
Once a year.
But the other thing you've got to realise in today's market is interest rates are rising. You're probably not going to incur any break fees anyway. Usually you tend to pay break fees when interest rates are on the way down compared to what you're currently paying. Other thing to just point out, if you are going to use that mortgage buster, I'd usually encourage you to have at least some of it on a shorter term rate so that you can take that money out of the revolving credit, pay it off the table loan. Next one's for you, Andrew. Regarding the mortgage buster, what would be more beneficial, to save money and then offset it, or offset and then save money?
So you'd put some of your loan on offset or revolving credit and then you'd save into that and then make the chunks. Is that the question? So I would set up either revolving credit or offset. I would save the money until I got to that limit and then I would make a lump sum payment to my fixed term.
But you're putting the money into the offset or the revolving credit, right?
It's you don't have to put it into the offset because money in your account offsets by default, but you're putting into a revolving credit if you're using revolving credit.
100%.
Ed, next question is, if you have 150K, is there any point paying off the offset loan or just having it available there?
Oh, so in this case, they're saying, hey, look, I've saved up my 150K into my offset, for instance. Should I just clear it or just have it available sitting there? And of course, it depends what you actually want to do, of course. Here's what I would do based on my situation. I would keep it there because I think there would probably be a good chance that I would want to use that 150K shortly in order to go and purchase an investment property. So here's what many investors will do that we work with. They'd keep that 150K there. When they want to go and borrow it for an investment property, they might then go take that money and go ahead and use that as the deposit. I think the main thing just to think about there, though, is in that situation, and we're getting real nerdy, I know, but you want to get some tax advice around that because there's some complications around how the interest payments are recorded. Next one for you, Andrew, with debt-to-income ratios being done away with by some banks, saying we're not going to include these as part of our servicing criteria anymore, does that mean it'll no longer be considered in lending?
Look, at the end of the day, it's just a horse by another name. If they don't use DTIs, they're using some sort of test which will give you a similar result. So I don't think it really changes your borrowing ability massively by the fact that they're doing away with this. Next question is, with regards to Earn Baby Earn, do the banks look at self-employed income differently to someone who is permanent staff?
The answer is kind of yes. So let's, for instance, say that I own a business and I'm the sole shareholder and I'm paying myself a salary, right? Now, if I decide, you know what?
Give yourself a pay rise.
I'm going to give myself a pay rise, and then it's going to look better from the bank's perspective. Actually, you know what? Next to no impact, and I'll tell you the reason why. Because if your business then makes a smaller profit to give you a higher pay, then from the bank's perspective, it's all your money anyway. So the great thing is that if you are a business owner, they'll not only look at your income, but they'll look at the profit of a business. So if you're thinking, oh no, I'm just going to give myself a pay rise. Hey, look, unless you've got other shareholders, for instance, like let's say you and I were in 50-50, Andrew, and I decide to give myself a pay rise, well, net, that would be more beneficial That's for right. me. But if this is just you, you're self-employed, you're sorting yourself out, you pay yourself a salary, hey, deciding to increase your pay isn't going to have any impact on your servicing most of the time. Next one for you, if you have a full-time salary and are also self-employed, Andrew, does the bank take into consideration your self-employed salary for lending? So let me just give an example around this. I have a part-time job. I earn 50K from that. I'm also self-employed.
OnlyFans.
And I have, well, OnlyFans is a totally different kettle of fish.
Why? Self-employed?
Well, the bank sometimes will look at it differently and discount your income because it's not in an industry that they might look kindly on.
Oh, actually, I know someone that actually got that loan, got a loan like that across the line.
Oh, is that correct? Yeah. Because I've had another investor as well.
Oh, really?
Where the banks were not as friendly with that, because of that.
That will come into play. I know it was harder to get. Peter did the loan, so I think it was a non-bank lender, to be fair.
Yes.
But look, absolutely, you can use all of your income towards your servicing. But again, if it's from something that maybe the bank might frown upon or smirk upon, then maybe.
We need to stop giving OnlyFans as an example. Now, the other thing is, I had another person ask a similar question, Andrew, where I think they earned 85 grand from their salary and 10 grand through self-employed income. Would they take all of the 10 grand self-employed income?
If it was consistent, absolutely.
What if it was from like a side hustle?
Define side hustle.
I don't know. You're selling clothes on the internet.
It's still self-employed income.
Yeah, as long as you can evidence it. Yeah. That's the key thing I was going for. You might have earned 10 grand over the last year, but can you evidence it to the bank with your financial statements, 2 years financial statements? Next one for me.
Can you talk more about self-employed income, specifically freelancer or subcontractor?
Well, this all comes down to consistency at the end of the day and how frequent your money's coming in. Let me give you a good example. Let's say that you're currently on a fixed term contract and you're doing some work for the government and, hey, look, you've managed to negotiate. Oh, God, you're on a great income at the moment. But that ends in 3 months' time and you're probably going to go down to a more normal level of income for you. Well, in that case, the bank's going to look at, well, your normal level of income, not the fact that, yeah, currently for the next 3 months and perhaps for the last 3 months, you've been earning a really good contractor's income. So it really comes down to consistency. If you are doing fixed term contracts, how likely is that going to be renewed? Do you have a history of fixed term contracts being renewed? Do you have a history of earning good income or consistent income? That's really the key thing there. So look, if you have been pretty consistent, wouldn't think it was too much of an issue. If you're a bit up and down and you know things are a bit more variable, I'd expect the banks to take a more conservative view. Next one, this one comes from Russell. After refinancing the owner-occupier home and getting the first investment property with the same bank, how soon can I split that property out and do the old polybankery split banking strategy?
Yeah, look, you can do that anytime. Obviously, if you've just settled on your investment property, there might not be a huge amount of equity uplift. So you are going to be leaving some of that loan behind with your existing bank if you do it sooner rather than later. If you wait for a wee while, you might be able to move more of that loan across. Next one is, in the assets section of the spreadsheet, one for you, Ed, how does it cater for multiple interest rates for a single property? For example, could one have split loans with different interest rates?
Look, at the moment it doesn't do it. I could do it, but at the moment I'd suggest you use an average. I'm thinking about putting it in, but to be honest, just put the average in. It actually has very little impact. Next one for you, how to get interest-only loans for 15 to 20 years. Is it possible?
You might need to change banks once you come up for renewal. Not necessarily, but maybe. But note that we've just released a 10-minute video on YouTube called The Ultimate Guide to Interest-Only Mortgages. That's going to go into it with more time than we can do today. Now, Ed, with the market dropping a bit, is there any indication that new builds are dropping less than existing houses due to the tax rules?
No, there's no evidence of that and there's no data available to come to that conclusion. Next one for you, that really was rapid. Can you please advise how banks view upcoming maternity leave? We're about to refix our mortgages and I'm about to go on maternity leave.
Look, you've got to tell them all the information. You've got to explain to them you are going on maternity leave. They're going to want to know when you're starting back and if you are starting back or if this is an indefinite thing. And they're just going to assess it based on that. Most banks are pretty flexible if you can get them a letter to state you are going to go back in the next 12 months. Next one for you, Ed. I'm loving the articles on the Opus website. Woo! I wonder if the date each article was written, could you please show whether or not there has been a legislative slash market change since the article was written?
So you want the date on the article so you know if it's still current or not.
Right.
Yep. Yes, we could do that. I'll get Lane to start doing that. She's our journalist. Next one for you, Andrew. With interest rising, what's your strategy for fixing rates? 1 year, 18 months, 2, 3, 5 years? Say on a $1 million mortgage.
If it were me, I'd be going 1 year at a time. But everyone's interest rate depends on their personal situation. If you can't sleep at night having a rate coming up in another 11 months, then you might want to fix for longer and pay a higher rate. But generally speaking, I think most of our investors are going 1 year at a time. And the next question is quite a long question, so I'm just going to summarise it. What do you think the foreseeable future is for being able to sell a two-bedroom townhouse in Christchurch, for example?
So he's asking here about what's the future market demand for townhouses. Look, I think it's quite obvious where the country's going. With rising house prices and being harder to get into the market, I think there'll be growing demand for specifically townhouses over apartments. They still offer you some privacy, a bit of a decent floor plan, and you don't have people living above and below you. I think the market for townhouses long-term is going to get much better. Next one for you, and we've got four more left. We're going to squeeze them in. This one's similar, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How does the bank see a permanent job versus a full-time contract job?
So permanent job, very easy. Full-time contract job, a bit more complicated. The bank might take out some extra cost if you've got them yourself, if you're claiming back some things. They really want to know how much stability there is. So a bit of it depends on the length of the contract. It's case by case, talk to your broker. Ed, do banks attribute a dollar value to a dependent?
Short answer, and I think this is because this person is mid-pregnancy. Short answer is yes, there are minimum costs when it comes to dependents, offspring. And it's somewhere between, I don't have my spreadsheet
it's
open.
It's a few $100s, I think.
Somewhere between $350 and $450 per month. That's minimum cost.
Mine's costing me more than that and she's not even born yet.
Yeah, well, in that instance, because Andrew's spending significantly more than the minimums on his kid, on the way, they'll take into account that extra cost and his spending habits in that situation. Next one.
My spending habits.
Two more. Can I split bank using a look-through company?
Absolutely. And Ed, last one for you. How do you transfer your owner-occupied property mortgage to an investment property?
In order to do this the right way, you need to sell your investment property to yourself. So that could be moving it from your own name into a look-through company into a trust, something along those lines. Now, the beneficial ownership can still be you, but you need it to move entities for you to legitimately increase the mortgage for tax purposes.
Not that there's any tax benefits nowadays.
Well, it depends if it's still considered a new build.
Oh, yes,
for instance, true. And I know this specific investor is investing in new builds, then they would be able to do that under rollover relief, is my understanding of it.
Get tax advice.
But hey, these are good. Top 20 questions asked and answered in I think just over 15 minutes. Hopefully we got there. Hey, look, thanks so much for everybody coming to that webinar. We had an absolute great time and thank you so much for your feedback. We know that you guys really enjoyed this specific one. Let's wrap it up there, but please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to the Property Academy podcast. Really does help us get the message out to more people. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.